Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning, June 1, 2019. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time, and you can hear us from anywhere on the planet online at 883wppb.org. And each show is also distributed on podcasts, on most podcast platforms, and archived on my website at annliguori.com. So this morning, we will focus on sports injury issues pertaining to athletes, both elite and amateur athletes, with three individuals who have done outstanding work in that profession. They all work at Northwell Health, right here on Long Island, and their influence and impact has spread beyond measure. Northwell Health was a sponsor of the PGA Championship, which was held at Bethpage Black in mid-May. And what their team did behind the scenes to take care of the spectators, the caddies, and the players is really interesting. We'll talk with Nina DiPola about their work at the PGA Championship. Nina is the Vice President of Orthopedic Service Line and Rehab Service Line at Northwell Health. And she'll share what they did in treating injuries at Bethpage. They treated over 1,000 people and had quite the wellness operation set up. It's mind-boggling what goes into treating so many people on such an expansive piece of property and what goes into staffing an event of this magnitude. Dr. Nicholas Gaglione is a professor and the chair of the Northwell Health Assistant Department of Orthopedic Surgery and at the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University. He also serves as the Senior VP for Orthopedics for the Northwell Health System and Executive Director of the Orthopedic Institute, which includes over 100 orthopedic surgeons. Dr. Gaglione shares his insight on the hot topics of regeneration of cartilage and the advances in that area. We also talk about head injuries in sports. We talk about the benefits of Northwell Health's association with Hofstra University and his work with the U.S. ski team, the USGA, and the New York Lizards professional lacrosse team. And Dr. David Battinelli is the Senior VP and Chief Medical Officer, Northwell Health, and Vice Dean and Professor of Medicine at Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University. Dr. Battinelli talks about the innovative curriculum that the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University offers in association with Northwell Health. He also talks about the importance of regular exercise and good nutrition, the advances in healthcare, what diseases are on the upswing, which ones have decreased of late, and just lots of other topics. If you're not familiar with Northwell Health, they are New York State's largest healthcare provider with 23 hospitals and more than 700 outpatient facilities. Northwell Health cares for more than 2 million people annually in the metro New York area and beyond, and they are New York State's largest private sector employer as well, with 68,000 employees, 16,000 plus nurses, and about 4,000 physicians, including more than 3,000 members of Northwell Health Physician Partners. There is so much information to absorb on sports injuries, on prevention, and so we're going to try to cover a lot of ground here this morning and remember the importance of regular exercise and good nutrition. I can't emphasize that enough. All this coming up in this hour of Sports Interview. Sports Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you in part by Northwell Health, where healthcare innovation both cures and cares. Northwell.edu for more information. And by Dune Jewelry and My Hamptons Rope Collection, savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or spot in timeless pieces for men and women. That's Dune, D-U-N-E, Jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, P-E-A-K Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game. PeakVision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. My guest is Nina DiPola, who is the Vice President of Orthopedic Service Line and Rehab Service Line at Northwell Health, and she was on site at Bethpage Black for the PGA Championship, and Northwell Health was all over it. I saw the medical treatment center. You were in a golf cart helping so many people. I want to get into that in a little bit, but talk a little bit, Nina, about, your work here, because it encompasses a lot, and I know you were a physical therapist also in golf.
Right. Thank you so much. Yes, I've been with Northwell Health for about 32 years. I started as a physical therapist in many areas. I was able to start a physical therapy business, STARS, which is sports therapy. As a PT, I absolutely loved working with golf. I interacted with many folks in the industry and got certified at a national level. And we really had a really great time working with golfers. As that evolved, we started running outings for the disabled. We got involved in certain niche markets. And I think we found that golf, there's a lot of wellness, but also treatment that I think can be appropriate. My role within Northwell Health is, as you said, orthopedic service line and rehabilitation service line. What that basically is, it's a line of business across the health system. So we have more than 20 hospitals, and I have about 30 or 40 growing practices with over 120 physicians. And what we're doing is offering specialty care everywhere from Westchester in the city all the way out to the east end of Long Island. Many of the specialties might be in the orthopedic realm of sports, foot and ankle, trauma, spine. And in the rehab end, we have specialties in spinal cord injury and many other neuromuscular injuries. So,
sounds like a lot. I don't know how you all find all the time, but let's first start with the PGA Championship, which is such an exciting championship here in our own backyard at Bethpage Black. And how Northwell was there just all over the place, right? So talk a little bit about some of the people that you treated there.
Yeah, so the planning began about 8 to 10 months ago. We engaged with PGA Championship. And what we started to think about is what can we offer them better, different? And traditionally, they have ambulances and medical stations. And we said, working with them, what can we do that would put us as best in class, being Northwell Health? So we used our entire spectrum of providers that we have. Number one, we offered 4 medical stations where patients can come in if they had any sort of ailment, injury, any sort of problem, aches and pains. What we did better different there is we put in athletic trainers that could do wraps for strains. We also had orthopedics on site, which we typically don't do. Number two, what we did is we offered a very boutique wellness center specifically for the players and the caddies. So we had in the pro shop, very private, we had physical therapists and athletic trainers. We had a line out the door one day at 6 in the morning, so we realized this was a hit. So we had about 25 athletic trainers and physical therapists doing stretching and treatment and helping any aches and pains so they can get out there and be the best they could be. The other thing that we did offer as a service was full ambulance, bike carts and stretcher carts as they needed. And what was also unique is we used the availability of specialists within Northwell Health. So whether it was a physician who could offer dentistry or dermatology or cardiac specialty, we had 28 different types of physicians on call for any player or caddy who needed expertise treatment in a moment's notice. It was a wonderful experience. I think the collaboration with PGA Championship was a real hit. And we're looking forward to working more in this type of venue.
Well, Bethpage Black, as you know, I mean, it's hilly, it's long. You know, it's a tough course to walk, not only for the pros, but obviously for the spectators as well. So how did that venue, what kind of problems, you know, did that venue present for a company like Northwell Health?
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I think we underestimated the ask, but we were very grateful that we had carts to get around.
You and John Daly?
Yes, yes, and John Daly, exactly. So we did, several of us had carts, which was really helpful, to transport our medical personnel. We had over 200 volunteers of our medical folks really helping us to pull this off. From our first medical station to one of the more distant one over at 12, it was about a 5-mile walk. So to ask that individual to go there would have been about an hour walk. What we noticed as far as injuries, especially out there, there were a lot of strains and sprains. 2 of our highest ailments that we saw were in the orthopedic environment of strains, sprains. We did have one that had to be rushed in for surgery. And the second ailment that we had was headache, fatigue, and dehydration. Overall, we saw close to 1,000 patients when we were there. And it was very interesting to see how that patient presented themselves just to make sure we had the right care available. But it really worked out well.
It seems like, you know, it's like one-stop shopping, Northwell Health. So it makes sense to be there because you can treat so many different kinds of injuries. And I'm sure that's a plus when the PGA Championship or any of these governing bodies are thinking, okay, who should we have to service this field?
Yes, I think what was exciting for us was to really look at the spectrum of services that we have. As we went down the road of communicating what we can offer, we offered a menu, a list of options, and we all got very enthusiastic over, why don't we try this, why don't we try this? So I think overall being creative and really fostering teamwork and let's learn as we go and really put our best foot forward, I think made this a huge success.
Any interesting anecdotes from the week? Did you treat any of the players?
You know, there were I would say, you know, more caddies that had fatigue, back strain, some shoulder issues, and just overall cramping because of the ups and downs of the course. It is quite a long course, as you mentioned. The players overall were very healthy. There were little tweaks here and there. If folks wanted stretching or if they wanted any sort of relaxation or limbering up at the end of the day. As far as anecdote, one thing that stands out in my mind is, like I mentioned, we had orthopedists on site. One of my orthopedists was walking along the course with a large pedestrian crowd, and a gentleman in front of him actually buckled and ruptured his quad tendon, buckled to the ground. This orthopedist was able to call over to one of our hospitals, North Shore Manhasset, see who was on call, get the operating room ready for him. The ambulance swooped him up, and he was able to get the best care as quickly as possible.
I wondered what they were going to do at the pro shop at Bethpage. Now I know you had your massage therapist in there, right, for all these caddies and players?
We had, as you can imagine, they reconfigure the entire clubhouse. We were able to get a very nice private area of physical therapists and certified athletic trainers to just offer boutique care if it was needed, more in the area of wellness, just to keep them as strong as possible.
What are the differences, Nina, in treating professional athletes versus, say, the weekend warrior?
Well, the interesting thing is, for a professional, they're highly trained, they're highly focused, they're available 24/7, and they're very intense and motivated to get well. And not only to get well, but also they are very open-minded and want to be educated on how to prevent injuries. With the weekend warrior, some of these are chronic problems. They take a while to identify. They may not be as available for care. So there's a lot more education to get them where they need to go.
How does Northwell Health educate? Because I was talking to, you know, the other doctors earlier, and that's a very preventative is, you know, prevention is so important. But, you know, a lot of people just don't understand, you know, what does that mean? What should I be doing? What should I be eating? Is there any kind of educational programs that, you know, just anybody could go to learn this kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, what's unique and wonderful about Northwell is we offer community outreach and events out there in the community, anything from a library to a forum holding about 250 individuals who want to come and learn about the best in care and how to prevent their issues. This is from any specialty that we have. We offer a robust amount of community outreach events that are available online on our website. In particular to the PGA, we also did a nice focus on prevention. And our major focus was about aches and sprains. So we had a lot of education from an orthopedic nature. But the number two issue that we really looked to educate that community was about skin prevention. So out in the sun, we had a huge amount of giveaways for sunscreen and education related to skin cancer prevention.
It runs a whole gamut. You have to think of everything, right? Well, Northwell Health is the largest health system in New York. How, Nina, does being a part of the largest health system in New York benefit patients in need of orthopedic care?
Well, the nice thing about the health system is, first, like I said, there's a culture of teamwork and really doing the best thing. I'd say since day one, we've always had a culture of treating that patient as if they're your family. The other thing about Northwell Health is there is a real drive to be innovative and forward-thinking and build programs and a real open mind within the organization to build programs of distinction. We can be quite unique. We tend to strive to be the best. We monitor our service, our care, our physician engagement, our staff engagement very seriously. We reward people and recognize them, which I think is wonderful. And lastly, we develop our talent in a really great way so that we are developing leaders who could be empowered to do the right thing for patients and can have green lights to develop programs such as sports health or anything else that perhaps is needed.
I know you've worked with a lot of golfers through the years as a physical therapist. And what kind of exercises, what kind of preventative measures should golfers think about before they go and play 18?
Yeah, I think the most important part is, again, a one-on-one assessment is always best because you can really understand where their motion is and where it isn't. The main thing you need for golf is flexibility. You also need a level of conditioning so that you can walk in long durations. But I would say the main thing is range of motion. So we work a lot on the upper quarter to get that whole shoulder girdle turning. We work a lot on strength and power within your core. So your abdomen and your obliques as you come down for that swing is really important to prevent back pain. And because you're picking up a ball up to 200 times during the game, you really need to have limber hamstrings, limber lower back. So I think an overall head-to-toe fitness of flexibility and walking endurance is really helpful to prevent any problems.
And you recommend somebody working with a trainer, or somebody who is totally educated about, the specific stretches and, things that you need to do to prepare.
Yes, there are a host of individuals out there. So depending on your need, you may need to go to a massage therapist if you have soft tissue tightness. There are physical therapists that, under a prescription of a physician, can help you if you have a total joint replacement or some sort of back pain. But there's also athletic trainers and personal trainers that are really great and available, I'm sure, at a host of gyms and facilities. If you just Google golf fitness, there are a lot of people who are certified in that area of expertise to really get people to perform the best way and to get them back into the game.
The worst thing an athlete can do is just go out and do their thing without stretching, without any preparation, whether you're running, whether you're biking, whether you're golfing, whether you're gardening. You really have to stretch.
Yes, stretching is key. Stretch, stretch, stretch. So there are many things online as far as flexibility exercise. Hamstrings, back, and shoulder girdles are probably the top three.
How did you get into this field?
So it's interesting. I did start off wanting to work with cancer patients who, for quality of life, and that opened the door to physical therapy. I wound up working at night in some sports therapy practices. I was completely energized by that particular area of specialty. The health system offered me about 20 years ago an opportunity to open what is now called STARS. We started, just a few of us, opening up sports therapy and rehab services. It's now an entity of 500-plus providers, and it's doing really well. I would say just getting the right people to do the right thing, hiring really quality therapists have really helped the success. But for me, my passion is just helping people with quality of life, no matter how they define that.
And what has Northwell Health meant to you and your work?
It's meant a lot. So I've been given a lot of green lights. I've had a lot of good people working around me. For me, it's become a family environment that is completely focused on doing the right thing for patients. So every day I go to work, I get energy back, and then I pay it forward and give it out. So I think overall it's been just a wonderful ride with Northwell Health.
Well, your resume is amazing, and you have such great intentions and do such wonderful work. Continued success, and thanks so much for joining us on Sports Interview.
Thank you so much. This was a pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. My guest is Nicholas Gaglione, professor and chair of the Northwell Health System Department of Orthopedic Surgery and at the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University. And boy, Nicholas, you also serve as the senior VP for orthopedics for the Northwell Health System and executive director of the Orthopedic Institute, which includes over 100 orthopedic surgeons. Wow, you wear a lot of hats, and it just seems like you're very, very passionate about your work.
Yes, well, I appreciate the opportunity to share, and certainly that's a mouthful, but I will say that without question, I love what I do every day, and it's mostly about taking care of patients.
And not only patients, but all these other surgeons.
Yes, it's very, very, I think, not challenging, but it's very interesting to me to be able to help grow programs. And one of the things that we're very proud of is not necessarily the number of surgeons, but the quality and breadth of what we have seen Northwell do with orthopedic healthcare. And it has grown dramatically since we began to put this department together about 10 years ago.
I want to hear all about that, but first I want to get into your own background. How did you get from there to here?
Well, what I love to do is practice sports medicine, and that really started by playing sports myself. And so in grammar school, high school, and college, I did play. And then when I became interested in medicine, one of the things that I became most interested in is taking care of other athletes. I first went to medical school at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and then stayed there for general surgery prior to specializing in orthopedic surgery at the Hospital for Special Surgery. Following that residency at HSS, I did a fellowship in sports medicine in Los Angeles and then returned here to New York to practice. And that was actually 30 years ago. And so I've certainly seen a lot of changes in medicine and particularly in orthopedics since.
Talk about some of your specializations in medicine.
So what I actually specialize in, for the most part at this point in my career, is knee and shoulder work treatment. And that, I will point out, involves probably more non-operative treatment and preventative treatment than actual surgery. But it also includes surgery. And the types of surgery I do includes everything from arthroscopy and treating sports-related injuries to those joints, to actual joint replacement and actual shoulder replacement and knee replacement. But prior to actually going to perform a knee replacement or a shoulder replacement, we will do everything in our power to preserve the joint or biologically restore the joint. And that has become very popular in the concept of articular cartilage biorestoration. What that means is that what we try to do is take an injured joint or a injury to the articular cartilage and surface of the joint and repair it or reconstruct it or restore it. And that has, I think, spawned a whole field in and of itself in which we are doing all types of articular cartilage transplantation.
It's such a hot topic, this regeneration of cartilage. And when did it become so hot? And talk about the advances, and when did all this come about?
So articular cartilage surgery or biorestoration probably began over 20 years ago. I mean, there's been an effort to try to change the natural history of an injured joint. And we know that in the past, if you had fractured the articular cartilage or broke off a piece of cartilage, the ability for it to heal has been limited, and many of these patients could go on to post-traumatic arthritis. So the effort to try to change that natural history, I think, began about 20 years ago or so and has come a long way and has been through many different iterations of treatments, both in terms of repairing the cartilage, using microfracture, which has been popularized, to where you drill the joint to try to bring in healing tissue. And more recently, a lot of advances in the area of taking fresh, cold-stored grafts from individual donors who then will pass on and donate parts of their body. And those grafts are harvested, and then we are able to transplant them into the defects that the athletes may have to change and reduce the natural history of those joints going on to post-traumatic arthritis. So it's a very hot topic. It's very compelling. I think it can change many of the problems that we have and exist and try to get these patients and athletes back on the field.
Why so much advancement in this particular area, in your opinion?
Well, a lot of the advances come from basic science. So the basic science and work that's been done in our lab here at Northwell under the direction of Dr. Dan Grandy has been extraordinary. So the basic science accomplishments have really lent themselves in a translational way to the ability to clinically practice and treat the actual patients, I think, has been the source of many of the advances.
Are you surprised by this advancement, or did you see it coming? Or
I'm not sure if I saw it coming, but I will tell you I'm surprised every day with what we have available in terms of treatments. But I will tell you the thing that I am most interested in is prevention. So some of the things that we're very interested in on a research level is if someone is injured, both on the field or even in terms of the military, is there something you can do initially, immediately upon injury, to reduce the impact of that injury? So in a way, preventing the long-term natural history where the joint breaks down by taking certain supplements or drugs or certain injections, biologic injections, to change the natural history of the joint. So I will say to you, one of the things that I think fuels the passion I have every day for what I do is the constant changing environment, the constant changing resources, and the constant changing science that allows us to do what we do.
It must be interesting when you explain all this to a patient, what their options are.
Well, what I like to do is I use a lot of different types of analogies and metaphors to be able to try to communicate better with patients about what is going on and what we can do. And one of those examples, very quickly, is I use the concept of having a hole in your lawn on the grass, and you can have the loss of the grass or you can have loss of the dirt. And that is, I think, compared to loss of the overlying cartilage on the bone and a hole in the bone. And there's many ways to grow grass, or there's many ways to transplant grass using, for instance, sod. And by using these types of comparisons, I think it allows us to translate, but more importantly, communicate effectively with the patients to try to understand what we're trying to do when we're trying to treat defects in the joint.
I love the analogy, and you can actually visualize that better, dirt, grass. It works. So you also are an editor of orthopedic textbooks, and more than 85 published articles and book chapters on knees, shoulders, ankles, cartilage surgery. That's a big job.
Well, I think that the key to what we do every day, and not just in terms of education of patients, includes also educating other doctors or physical therapists or allied professionals. And one of the things that we're very proud of is our work at the medical school, at the Zucker School of Medicine. So we are exposed and have the enormous privilege and opportunity to teach medical students, to teach residents, and as I said, teach other physicians who are active practicing in the community. And I think that ability to give back in terms of scholarly activity is just so important and so essential to our mission, which is to try to be at the very best of our ability to take care of patients.
How long has the association been with Northwell Health and Hofstra? And could you talk a little bit about it? Because I think that association is so important.
So Hofstra was something that I think was a vision in the leadership of Northwell beginning in 2009 and then certainly became realized in 2011. So we've been involved with the medical school from the beginning and just had another graduating class of medical students. And we also now have some of the previous graduates of the medical school involved in training in our orthopedic surgery program. So there's been think, a tremendous collaboration at all levels with the health system and the medical school. It's been the most exciting thing, and that's something I never thought would come to fruition and has.
And you enjoy the professor part of your work.
Well, the name or the title is less important to me than I think what really is a privilege, what I consider a privilege, to be in a position to share information with others.
You also work with so many different sports teams. You've worked with the U.S. ski team. You've worked with the United States Golf Association, the New York Lizards, the lacrosse, professional lacrosse team. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I think that we all in society look to the care that professional athletes demand and that are provided to consider what we want. So what I think is that by taking care of the professional athletes or the elite athletes, it allows us to hone our skills and respect, I think, what is a need for these individuals to get back to play, because it's not only their entire lives, but it's their occupation. And then take that approach to the care of the elite athlete and export it to the recreational athlete or the weekend athlete. My experience with the professional teams and with the professional athletes that we've been taking care of for many, many years has been that this is a very select group that's extremely motivated to get better. First of all, they get hurt frequently. And second of all, when you treat them, they're very diligent about getting better. So I think this is always what I would consider the top of the game in terms of taking care of patients. And it's very exciting, but I treat everyone, we say we like to treat every one of our patients like family, no matter who they are. I like to treat every one of my patients like an elite athlete, even if it's someone who is in their 80s and they want to play golf more frequently. They consider themselves athletic or active, and so we export these approaches to that same group as well.
Any one sport to present more injuries than another?
Well, what we see is depending upon certain types of sports, more, for instance, knee injuries or lower extremity injuries in the football players, American football players, and soccer players. We will see more upper extremity and neck injuries in the snowboarders, particularly wrist and hand. Lacrosse, we will see both upper and lower extremity. So it depends on the sport. What I think is most compelling is really the attention that has been paid to recently in the area of head injuries and concussions. And we see this in a number of sports, both everything from skiing to lacrosse and soccer. And I think having been taking care of patients with concussions for 30 years, I'm pleased to say that due to the media and due to society's attention and the medical attention to concerns over the long-lasting effects of concussions, we've become much more sophisticated in our ability to not only think about when a patient should return after a concussion, but also trying to perhaps reduce the incidence of concussions.
I do a lot of shows on head injuries in sports, and so it's a very important topic. And I think you're right. I think through the years, there's been a lot more education, you know, for parents and coaches and athletic directors on that subject. And you being a doctor who treats, you know, athletes with all kinds of injuries, you know, helmets are a good thing.
Helmets are a good thing, there's no question. And then more and more sophisticated design of the helmets, I think, has been a mainstay. But I would point out, like, for instance, in the NFL, even though there have been tremendous advances in the area of helmet design, the NFL over the last few years has made significant changes in rules regarding tackling and contact to try to reduce the incidence of injury, say, for instance, in quarterbacks. and reduce the injury of head injuries, depending upon how you tackle. And that debate continues and rages on in, say, for instance, women's lacrosse, in which women's lacrosse players do not wear helmets, but men's lacrosse players do wear helmets. And that debate has centered on whether we should add helmets to the female players or continue to preserve certain rules to reduce the injury. I think it's probably a little bit of both.
I was going to ask you about that because I know you're a father of a daughter who plays lacrosse. And to me, I played a lot of sports, but I never played lacrosse. But watching a game, it's just so physical. And I always thought, well, why aren't the girls and the women wearing helmets? Because the guys certainly do.
Yeah, it is something that I've thought about a fair amount, spending a certain amount of time on the sideline. You're right. My daughter is an All-American lacrosse player at college. And I would say to you, though, there are many, when we look at the actual injury analysis for women's lacrosse specifically, it's not just, it's interesting, not just, for instance, head to body contact, but it can also be the lacrosse stick to the head. It can also be being hit by a lacrosse ball. So these injury analyses are multifactorial, and so therefore I do believe that it isn't just plopping helmets on their heads. I do think there's a need in terms of the way they play and how play has become much more aggressive post-Title IX play, and we know that there's such a higher incidence of, for instance, ACL injuries in certain women athletes, particularly basketball or soccer. There's a higher incidence of concussions in certain groups of women compared to males. And in women particularly, concussions can, in general, be graded more severe with cognitive dysfunction and recovery taking longer in certain women compared to men. That being said, I think we need to look at this from every angle in terms of reducing prevention. It's not just equipment.
Do you think if women were to wear helmets, play would get a little dirtier? Would they try to go for more penalties and, be more aggressive?
I think there may. Certainly it depends on the style of play. And I've watched some very aggressive games, and I think that's a possibility, and we'd like not to see that change and become more of a game similar to men's. Other people would probably like to see that. But I think that's something we have to pay attention to.
I'm interested, getting back to our discussion about elite athletes versus perhaps recreational athletes, what is the average recuperation time for professional athletes for, say, knee surgery, and how much does that differ compared to perhaps an amateur athlete?
So I think the important points to take away in regard is that there are certain things in medicine and in orthopedics and sports medicine that have enjoyed tremendous advances in our ability to do surgery more minimally invasively. The technological advances have allowed us to do things that we couldn't do even 5 to 10 years ago. But biological healing hasn't necessarily changed. And biological healing, maybe the surgical insult has been reduced, but biological healing times may not have been reduced. And so in certain athletes or patients that have certain repairs, healing times can still, and recovery times can still take a season. And there are individuals that may be out a whole year. There are other types of surgeries in which we don't repair, but we trim or resect, in which certain athletes can be back within a month in terms of knee arthroscopy. But probably the key comment or statement to take away is that for the elite athlete or any patient or any athlete who is injured, who is in tip-top shape and in the best of conditioning, and then sustains an injury, and is not allowed to become deconditioned, and then has surgery, that individual who is diligent in their recovery and post-operative physical therapy, for instance, will recover more effectively, more efficiently, and perhaps more quickly than individuals that perhaps are injured, become out of shape, don't do any physical therapy prior to the surgery, wait to have the surgery, and then start from a position of disadvantage in terms of their recovery time, because they sort of have to catch up to baseline and then recover from the actual insult of the surgery. So what we're seeing is, without a question, that if someone goes into surgery in optimal conditioning and optimal shape, they are in a better position to recover more predictably after the surgery.
Would that be a reason to advise somebody to lose a lot of weight before they perhaps go into surgery?
Absolutely. And probably the best example will be a certain articular cartilage or joint procedures and even joint replacement. We have many active athletic patients, baby boomers, who have had injuries when they were in college. They're athletes, and now they come back and they're 60 years of age, and they end up needing a joint replacement. There are, in that group, a number of individuals who are out of shape or obese, and those patients may have a tougher time recovering than someone who is more adequately conditioned prior to having a joint replacement. And we absolutely see that hands down.
You've covered so many different sports and have dealt with so many different injuries. I've done play-by-play for Alpine at several Winter Olympics, and does it amaze you as much as it amazes me that after these athletes, for instance, a Lindsey Vonn, will re-injure her knee or whatever, so many different injuries, and then get back to training, and then go back and do it again, especially downhill, because that's such a crazy sport. You have to be really a different kind of athlete mentally, I think, to go those speeds and to be that daring. But, as a doctor, does that amaze you?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And that's that passion for competition and the passion. These are the elite athletes are not going to give up. The thing that I'm very interested in is re-injury rates, and that is there are a number of individuals that have surgery and some get back and don't have another problem, and others seem to have repetitive injury or re-injury. And one of the things that we're looking at scientifically is to study when should they optimally return to play? Can we measure their performance in the recovery period to say, well, perhaps at 9 months, release you to play, but perhaps you should be released at 12 months and try to measure that a bit more carefully? And does that then translate to a reduced re-injury rate? What you're dealing with in this group is you're managing not only the physical problem and the extremity that they injure, but you're managing the psychological component of being injured or on the injured reserve list or in the recovery phase. And many of these individuals are very anxious to return. And I think it's our responsibility working with them and counseling them that they should return when they're absolutely ready, and not only physically ready, but psychologically ready to reduce the risk of re-injury.
We could talk forever. My last question, your thoughts overall on Northwell Health. It just seems to me that you and so many of your colleagues are doing such great work in the field of sports medicine.
So I'm very, very excited about Northwell Health and Northwell Health Orthopedics. And probably the key takeaway is that Northwell Health is very personal in terms of its approach to healthcare. Northwell Health is very innovative and open-minded to changes in healthcare. And Northwell Health is extremely dedicated to quality in healthcare. And so I think that makes us stand out.
Thanks so much for joining me on Sports Interview. Nicholas Scaglione.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Sports Interview with Ann LaGoria is brought to you in part by Northwell Health, where healthcare innovation both cures and cares. Northwell.edu for more information. And by Dune Dorian, my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or spot in timeless pieces for men and women. That's Dune, D-U-N-E, Jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game, peakvision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. My guest is David Battinelli, who is an MD, Senior VP, and Chief Medical Officer for Northwell Health and Vice Dean and Professor of Medicine at the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So great to talk to you and your colleagues. You all do so many things. I don't know how you find the time. You are responsible for 15,000 doctors. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, it's really a big part of my job as chief medical officer. So the chief medical officer's role really is responsible for all the clinical care at all of our places. It includes our hospitals, our ambulatory sites, our physician practices. And we have about 15,000 physicians credentialed with privileges throughout our health system.
And so how long has Northwell Health had this relationship with Hofstra? Because I think that's fascinating as well.
So we, as an organization, decided back around 2007, 2008, that we should enter into a relationship to have a medical school. Hofstra University, as a degree-granting organization, was a natural partner for us here on Long Island. And so Northwell Health, back then it was North Shore LIJ prior to the name change, but Northwell Health, in partnership with Hofstra University, co-founded and really co-owns the School of Medicine. And it's now the Zucker School of Medicine after a very generous donation from Donald and Barbara Zucker to fund students of need, really.
And how do you like going into the classroom? That's a different kind of part of your job as well.
So my job's split. You know, I work as the vice dean for the School of Medicine. Initially, I was working with Dean Larry Smith, and we built the school and primarily around an advanced curriculum. Both of us have spent many, many years in education, and when you're in education for that length of time, you sort of, you know, have a lot of ideas, you have a lot of colleagues, you think of a lot of things that you'd like to do. If you could start over, if you could start fresh, it's really difficult in established universities. I was at Boston University, he was at Mount Sinai, to really make dramatic curricular changes. But we knew that the time was ready for that. So we embarked on this project with the university, the new School of Medicine, and we really put forward a very dramatically different curriculum for this age of students.
And how dramatically different is it?
Well, it all depends on your frame of reference. You know, old school doctors will know that we all sat in lectures. We had to memorize a lot of material. We had to take a lot of standardized exams, all of which most of these people were pretty good at anyway. That's the way you get into medical school, by doing well in, you know, in high school and college and on standardized exams. But we changed the entire paradigm. We moved from what was traditionally 2 years of what people call preclinical time or basic science, followed by 2 years of clinical time, to an integrated model of 4 years of science and clinical all at the same time. And we were able to do that only because of this relationship between Northwell, with its vast assets in clinical medicine and research, partnered with a university and a campus where we could put all this together. So our students are in the practice of medicine from the very first days of medical school. We have no, quotes, standardized exams, meaning multiple choice question tests. There's not a single one in the school. We do oral exams, essays, and actually standardized patients. And, you know, our mantra is, if you can't explain it to a patient or demonstrate the ability to do it, then we don't believe that you actually know it. The ability to just answer a multiple choice question test is a surrogate for that, but it isn't as good as the real thing.
So obviously more practical education, and, you know, from an, you count on their experiences, but also, you know, not a textbook education as the, you know, you want them to be more practical and be able to communicate to the patient.
Yeah, we have a very, very strong emphasis on the humanities and the communication. And again, because we can actually spend the time working directly with the students. Northwell Health has a Center for Learning and Innovation, what we call CLI, and within it is a Patient Safety Institute, where we can actually do 20 mannequin-based simulations or standardized patients. We have the largest standardized patient lab in the world. And so we decided that, you know, if we were going to do this, we wanted to do it the way we envisioned it. And it was really going to be not about, you know, lectures and memorization, because back in the old days, you needed professors who had all that information because you didn't have the internet. You didn't have ubiquitous knowledge and reference. Now you have that. So students can get the information however they get it. What we want to do is make sure that they digest the information and apply the information practically. And that's where Northwell Health, with its vast assets, all its doctors, its hospitals, its ambulatory sites, serves as an unbelievable resource for the university and the School of Medicine.
Do you find that other universities have copied this model?
You know, I need to be careful how I say it, because other universities, literally over 50 other medical schools, have visited us, mostly to see what we're doing because they've heard about it. Right. And students are very enamored with it. It's tough to copy because without a sort of fresh start, it's a little different. And very few places have the resource or the full assets that Northwell Health has.
How did you get into internal medicine?
You know, everybody goes to med school and sort of differentiates in some way, but I was always much more interested in the application of the pathophysiology as an internal medicine sort of thought process rather than a surgical interventional process. Had great mentors, trained up at the Boston City Hospital, and, you know, really embraced internal medicine. Some call it primary care, but it's really the specialty of internal medicine across many disciplines.
When researching for this interview, I read where the field of orthopedic research will continue to grow in order to address the increasing global burden that musculoskeletal injury and disease presents itself. Why is musculoskeletal injury and disease on the upswing?
So it's interesting. You know, you look at the reason that a patient seeks medical care, in even internal medicine, primary care doctor, the vast majority of the reasons are for musculoskeletal reasons. You know, aches and pains, knee ache, elbow ache, back ache, neck ache, whatever it happens to be. You know, that's what we're bound by, our own skeleton and our own muscles. We have other illnesses, but you can be sure that as people live longer, and we have advances in orthopedic surgery, joint replacements, et cetera. You know, the longer you live, the more aches and pains you're eventually going to get.
So what should we do to prevent this kind of thing? I mean, there's more and more research about that. Is there, and I know a lot of you doctors are you know, really encourage preventative medicine. What should we think about in preventing these kinds of diseases and illnesses?
So these illnesses really fall into the same bucket as the other illnesses. And one of the things that we do know is that what we can impact on is only about 20% of medical care, and that the rest of it really is probably derived from other things such as diet and exercise, behavioral health, social determinants and things. So what everybody does encourage is sort of the basics. It's kind of back to basics. It's diet and exercise. You know, stay at the right weight. Make sure you get enough exercise, and even if you can't do a lot of aerobic exercise, stretching is critically important. You know, we now have lots of people, even up here in corporate office, you see people standing at their desks, and, you know, they say sitting is the new smoking, right? You know, so it's like, you know, you don't want to be sitting around all day contracting and not getting, you know, stretching and all those other things. So staying fit, staying at the proper weight, and right nutrition is critical.
Especially as you age, too, you have to keep moving. Movement keeps you young. Exercise keeps you young. I can't tell you how many times I recommend all people, all different ages, they have to exercise every day.
Right, so there's the aerobic exercise, and you know, no matter what study you look at, even people who just use the stairs, even if there's only 20 steps, you know, a day, it makes a difference versus somebody who doesn't. But it's also the paying attention to nutrition, and it's also the stretching. You know, there's certain types of exercises, but if you don't sort of make sure that you vary it and you stretch all parts, you know, you'll have a contracted neck and you won't be able to, you know, see behind you, all that sort of stuff.
Yoga regularly?
Again, what's good about yoga is it's heavy into stretch, and of course, it's not just the leg or just the arm, it's the entire body, which makes it so difficult.
Would you recommend aerobic, some stretching every day or a couple times a week?
So more is better than less, but it's probably pretty clear that, you know, three or four times a week gives you just about as much as more than that, and then you always run the risk of overuse, and you certainly don't want to do it when it hurts. You know, you should back off. It's not like you're going to, you know, not be able to get back to where you were before. You have to do it, with, like everything, in moderation with some common sense.
And how can people keep their bones healthy?
So there are lots of different diseases you need to be aware of, and it depends on what the rest of is going on. But you probably should initiate a conversation with your physician about, you know, your concern for healthy bones. And, you know, one of the things that the physicians will pay attention, as they do with other things, is your family history. So if somebody in your in your family has osteoporosis or hunched over back or, you know, easily broken bones, you will also be at risk for those things and will have specific interventions toward that. Again, diet and exercise, certain types of nutrition, vitamins, etc.
So do you think a lot of these conditions are perhaps inherited?
Everything's inherited to some degree, and it's a combination of, you know, what your genetic makeup is, along with your environment and, again, the diet and exercise that you, you know, put yourself through over all those years.
In your field, doctor, what do you see occurring more than anything else? And has that changed through the years?
Well, so there are some good things, right? So cardiovascular disease is definitely on the decline, and that's attributed to more knowledge about what we should be eating, more attention to aerobic exercise. Probably the most important thing is the decrease in smoking throughout the United States. You know, if you look at 60 years ago when the Surgeon General's report first came out, it was nearly 50% of Americans that smoked, and right now it's between 15 and 20%. There was a time when nearly 50% of physicians smoked. Fortunately, that's down to about 1 to 2% right now. Better medications, the statins and other things. So that's on the decline. You know, unfortunately, because there was so much smoking going on before, what's on the rise are many types of cancers. Unfortunately, lung cancer, and even more unfortunate, COPD, right? So the effects of emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease as a result of the smoking, since once you stop smoking, you certainly decrease your risk for future cancers, but you can't reverse the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Then there's a lot of other things, but nothing in particular. I think that those are the big, you know, people talk a lot about cancers. We know a lot more about environmental factors, but the real good news about cancer is that we have made great strides in treating cancer, and the concept of cancer survivorship is front and center. So we have twice as many people alive living with cancer as we did 25 and 50 years ago.
That's fascinating information. Can you talk a little bit, doctor, about healthcare, the changes today, and how Northwell Health is positioned to deal with those changes?
So one of the things that Northwell Health prides itself in is the continuum of care. While many people may know us about a place that has a lot of hospitals, you see a lot of our signs, we actually have nearly 800 ambulatory facilities, and we believe that we should be treating patients in the ambulatory arena and trying to keep them out of the hospital and keep them as healthy as possible. So we're heavily invested in preventative care and other types of care. And I think that's something that people don't quite know enough about us. We have the vast majority of all types of things, including what we call the tertiary and quaternary things. We're doing heart transplants. We'll be starting liver transplants very soon. We do other types of transplants, orthopedic surgery, neurosciences, cardiac. But it's the continuum of care from the ambulatory through the hospitals, through our long-term care facilities, through our hospice facilities, as well as our maternity services. We are delivering slightly more than 1% of all the babies in the United States every single year. So it's really a vast organization and a big commitment to behavioral health. While other places are not investing in behavioral health, we are. We know that it's critically important, and not just for people who only have behavioral health problems, but we know that people who have a cardiac problem or a respiratory problem or a musculoskeletal problem are more difficult to take care of if they also have a behavioral health problem. So, and Well, most people don't want to admit it. Roughly 50% of the U.S. population will, at some time during their life, have a behavioral health issue.
So I think the education part of it is so key, just educating to, you know, everybody out there what's available here. And you talk about, you know, prevention. How does one prevent all of this? You really have to be knowledgeable. And the more you know, obviously, the more you can put all those that information to use.
Yeah, so I mean, it's some regular relationship with you know, the healthcare profession, whether it be your primary care doctor, your what I like to call your principal provider, somebody who is you're seeing, and their team of professionals. So we're heavily invested in interprofessional education as well. We know what we have termed ACPs, advanced care providers, a combination of advanced nurse practitioners and physician's assistants in concert with the other providers. Is really the team that can help take care of you. You know, you go to see a particular type of doctor and people say, well, my doctor doesn't know a lot about nutrition and other sorts of things. No one person can know everything, but that team of people really is the best approach. That physician will make some clinical judgment issues. The other people on the team, whether it be nutritionists or the NPs or others, will help deal with some of the other day-to-day activities as well. That's really the best approach.
A lot of responsibility. What do you do when you're not working, when you have some time off?
I love outdoors. Can't move around as well as I used to. I used to play a lot of basketball. No more. Playing golf, go fishing, family, try to make the best of it.
Thanks so much, David Battinelli, MD, Senior VP and Chief Medical Officer for Northwell Health. Thanks so much. My thanks to Don Simon of Northwell Health. My thanks to Nina DePaula, to Dr. Nicholas Baglione, and to Dr. David Battinelli, and to our engineer, Kyle Lynch. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.